former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Michael Lombardi gets the day off today. In steps Jonathan Von Tobel. So happy to have you, senior NBA handicapper here at VSiN, because we have a heavy NBA day today. Michael, though, upset. He's not on the show today, but he does still have to come for the photo shoot.
I was going
to
say, he's here, so why am I? Like, that's if he walks in at some point, we're going
to
tap out, right?
He wanted to sleep in today to be, like, camera ready, obviously. The photo shoot. Very important stuff. How'd yours really go yesterday?
No, I don't want to talk about it.
Come on.
I don't know if you can tell. I don't like to take myself very seriously. So when I'm supposed to do it and, like, you know, like, pose seriously and do stuff like that, not a big fan. We did a lot of, like, the, you know, like, catch the football and point thing and, like, yes, all sorts of stuff. So I will say I used a lot of fake $100 bills in mine. So...
Did you have a money gun?
Yeah, we had the money gun.
Very cool.
I had the fake $100 bills. I offered to light the $100 bills on fire and, like, hold them like this. That was shot down.
That's when you got to get the things that, like, athletes do when they do their photo shoots.
Yeah.
How they have the fire that's just on the tips.
Oh.
And it lasts 2 seconds, but you have to capture it quickly.
13-year-old John Von Tobel could tell you all about that. Just, we would just go in the back and, like, cover your hands and, like, rubbing alcohol, like, and light it on fire and just do all sorts of stuff. Put it in your mouth and spit out fireballs all the time.
Okay, that's a little bit too much.
Oh, it was great. Absolutely great.
We've reached our limits here. But yeah, for anybody who didn't know, we've got some VSiN marketing photos that everybody is doing. So me and Michael will be doing that in a little bit after the show today. But speaking of money guns, if only it was real cash, because that's what people cashed in on yesterday with the favorites. 3 of 3 in the NBA yesterday. Teams winning and covering the spread. That trend continues, by the way. Been crazy. Just the team that wins the game covers the spread. 13-0 in this postseason. 158-14.
Yeah, so we actually talked about this yesterday on the Harvard Handicappers podcast, which, by the way, is out every single day now. We'll record a new episode later today. And so my question to Kelly was more like, so it's an interesting trend, but I'm always kind of struggling with, okay, what is the predictive value of that trend, right? So we know that, well, if an underdog wins, they're going to cover, right? Because they won the game outright. So I guess the thing is, with underdogs, don't bet them against a spread. Just bet them on the money line if you think that the underdog has an edge. And if you like the favorite, don't mess around with the money line. Just lay the points. I assume that's like what the predictive value is going forward. But I always just felt like, and I'm totally open to being wrong about thinking like this, but I feel like it's kind of like a rearview mirror trend. Like, oh, here we go. It keeps happening. Well, it's like, well, sure. There's an outcome of the underdog winning because they're going to cover, and then the favorite. So I guess that's it, though. If you like a favorite, don't be afraid of laying the points, because if they're going to win, they're going to cover. And if you like the underdog, take the money line. Yeah. I think that's the way you use that trend.
Whoever you think is going to win, make that bet, basically.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And one of the big ones yesterday, of course, the Suns, who punched back after the game one loss to the Clippers. Chris Paul, speaking of streaks, we have another one in that one. The 13-0 streak, the 0-13 streak, excuse me, with Scott Foster being the main official for the game. That has finally come to an end. So good for Chris Paul.
I guess he's kind of annoying, so I'm not really a big fan. Former Clipper, though. Clipper version of Chris Paul, I'm all in on. Now, I liked the joke yesterday where a lot of people thought that him and Scott Foster sort of swapped jerseys at the end, you know, to celebrate the end of the run. But I got to give it to Chris Paul, man. He was great down the stretch of this game. He did look like vintage Chris Paul, and they were going after Ivica Zubac in a lot of pick-and-roll situations and finding open spots. And this is what I love so much about the NBA playoffs, Stormy, because, you know, you really follow it intricately. The X's and O's aspect of these series are fascinating, and the adjustments that you see from game to game are incredible. And you clearly saw that the adjustment for the Phoenix Suns was, we're going after your bigs, and we're going to force them to defend in space. And there were a lot of times where Ivica Zubac was contesting shots on Kevin Durant or Chris Paul. Chris Paul was going up against him in space and getting to his spots as he usually does. I was really impressed with the adjustment there to do that. So now it's on the Los Angeles Clippers. And what's the adjustment? The Clippers are a team that, in the past, one of their stalwarts was a five-out lineup. So just a small ball center and just go out there, play five guys out, and attack off dribble penetration. You wonder if maybe that's the adjustment, where if they start to go after Zubac and Plumlee again, where they're going to go, all right, well, we're just going to put like Robert Covington in at the five, and we're going to switch everything, and we're going to go at you in that way, and we'll see how it works. But the game-to-game adjustments are fascinating. And, you know, the Suns are so highly rated, they're still going to be favored in this series after taking that. But you mentioned the trend here that we've seen in terms of the teams that win and cover. It is early, but so far home teams have been taking care of business as well. 9-4 mm-hmm. straight up and against the spread. And we'll see if that means anything for the Clippers, who are now going back home here.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to imagine they're playing with a little bit of house money now, just yep. knowing that they already were able to steal one on the road against the squad. How impressive was Devin Booker to you? 38 points on the night, that third quarter where he did his best work, scored or assisted on 28 of the Suns' 33 third quarter points.
And like highly contested ones yeah. too. Like that was the really impressive part about what Devin Booker was doing there. And really, you could kind of see it coming when they got out in transition and he hit that open three to tie it up at halftime, and you were like, all right, yeah, this is probably going to head in their direction. And sure enough, it really did. But that's also the danger of the Phoenix Suns, right? When you have two elite shot makers and Chris Paul, who can be an elite shot maker in their areas of the floor, well, it's going to be hard to really knock them off of their game, especially when they're on. And you saw that. You mentioned Devin Booker, Kevin Durant with a perfectly fine 10 of 19 shooting night from the floor himself. He did miss all four of his three-point attempts, but still was money from mid-range. And that's where this team was, Stormy. And I do wonder, like, big picture, right? It is an elite mid-range shooting team, and they are perfectly capable of doing this. But most of their offense coming from mid-range, 64% on mid-range attempts. They shot 16 of 22 long mid-range, which is just about 14 feet inside of the arc. And so you're wondering, like, okay, man, like, that's a really high rate. That's awesome. They're capable of doing it. But when you're talking about the edge that the Clippers still have in terms of three-point makes, I do wonder how this plays out going forward. But they're elite. I don't think there's really any question that those two guys, and especially 2.5, you include Paul when he's on, they're freaking awesome.
Absolutely. The Celtics also beat the Hawks last night, 119-106, as a 10-point favorite. They go up 2-0 in the series. The Hawks did look live there for a hot minute early on, led 22-11, but that quickly dissipated. The Celtics ended up going on a 17-3 run, had a 61-49 lead by halftime. So I was able to cash my ticket on the Celtics first half. That was my like lone bet of the NBA yesterday. You have always like angles to bet every single game, even if you're not actually betting it. You just have like perspective and thoughts on it and everything. I do like one bet a day, two bets a day, just trying to see what I can get. And I was happy that this one came through and that Michael talked me out of Clippers plus 8.5 because I was very invested into that one at first. Yes.
And you know what's the thing is, look, variance can kind of be cruel for you if you're talking about the course of a best of seven, because even though more often than not the numbers should play out over the course of a best of seven series, they're still inherently small sample sizes. Through two games now, the Atlanta Hawks are 21-76 from three-point range, 27.6%. Like they have not been able to hit the broadside of a barn with their shots from distance, and that has really made a massive difference for this team. It's the reason why both of these games have gone under the total. It's the reason why Atlanta has lost both of these games comfortably, and you just go through those stretches where they just cannot do anything against this Celtics defense, and it's a really big deal because if the three-point shots aren't falling, Stormy, and on top of that, you're shooting as a team that takes a majority of their attempts from mid-range as well, just 41% on your own mid-range attempts, well, that's going to lead to disjointed offense. And sure enough, for Atlanta, the first game around, 97.1 was their offensive rating. And then last night again, I think their offensive rating was in the range of like 101. 105. So their offense has done nothing here against the Boston defense. And you haven't really seen anything other than, hey, you know what? They're going back home. They're down two games. Maybe the scenario is going to help them out going back home down 2-0. But
which I still find very hard to believe. And Trae Young, part of the three-point shooting woes, 2 of 8 from three over the last two postseasons now. He is 10 of 51 from range. That is not what you're looking for. Boston, though, 64 points in the paint, the most in a playoff game, their most in the playoff game over the last 25 seasons. Game three is coming up on Friday, and teams up 2-0 in best of sevens in the NBA postseason, 308-26, win percentage of 92%. Celtics specifically 41-1 in those situations up 2-0, and the Hawks 0-20 when trailing 0-2. So just few little things, food for thought there. And then the last game of the night result-wise, Cavaliers beat the Knicks 107-90, their first playoff win without LeBron since 98.
Yep, and the big difference, and so you go back to that first game, and like the big question was, okay, who's going to help outside of Donovan Mitchell, right? Who's going to have a game that is going to push this team forward outside of Donovan Mitchell? And it's not even just in terms of scoring, but in terms of everything else. And you got scoring from Darius Garland. You also got brilliant passing from Darius Garland. He had 7 assists. Mitchell added 13. They were moving the ball around. Their offense was freaking awesome. Offensive rating in that game of 117.2. And the biggest difference for them as well was twofold. And this is what I wrote about yesterday, which was like, okay, are you, if you're the New York Knicks, going to be able to add to your offense through transition as much as you were off of steals, Well, the Cleveland Cavaliers won that battle in terms of transition offensive efficiency off of steals. And the other thing was the rebounding. Cleveland was going to have to be better on the boards. And while they still gave up quite a few offensive rebounds, they themselves, offensive rebounding rate of 37.8%. And if you look at some of their half-court numbers, too, in terms of what they were generating off of putbacks, they won that battle as well. It made a really big difference. And you do wonder, too, Stormy, like, when you look at the Knicks, right, they were last in assist rate in the NBA in the regular season. And one of the things that kind of bothers you is if they're on and their individual players are playing really well, well, then you get really good results, like the game one win. But if you're not, then it kind of gets a little bricky and your offense gets a little inefficient because you're not moving the ball as well as the other team. And if guys like Jalen Brunson are only going 5 of 16 or Julius Randle's going, you know, 8 of 20, then all of a sudden you're looking around and going, okay, where else are we getting our offense from, at least efficiency-wise? And it's not really there. So I think you kind of saw that play out here. But overall, you went on the road. You got to win. You have home court. So now you get two games back in New York.
Yeah, and that's something on the other side of the break. I think we can kind of talk about just the general situations and how to bet versus the numbers and when a team is in a position where they have to win or they're bouncing back, going back at home, all different interesting conversation topics with regards to that game, though. A 17-point loss that felt like it could have been 30. Like, that final result even closer than it really felt like in the moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's like you said, what we're entering now is the most fascinating part of these series, where you're talking about teams down 2-0 and what the market does with some of those numbers and how bettors really like to bet into some of those trends and how you balance that thing out. But these series, I will always stress, these series are nowhere near done. I mean, you mentioned that down 2-0 stat. The Clippers themselves were a team that came down from multiple 2-0 deficits to win those things in the last few years. So would not sleep on any of these teams after just two games. We barely know anything.
Yeah, Cavs-Knicks updated series price virtual pick'em. Cleveland minus 115 in the set. Knicks minus 105. Draymond Green suspended a game for the stomp on Domantas Sabonis. We will discuss that and these series more when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM. State-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you live from Circa Resort and Casino. The news coming out overnight in the NBA that Draymond Green will be suspended one game for the stomp on Domantas Sabonis. He's going to serve that suspension on Thursday when the Warriors host the Kings for game 3 at Chase Center. And in a statement made by the NBA, JBT, the suspension was based in part on Green's history of unsportsmanlike acts.
Yeah, not surprising.
Shocking.
Yeah, and like this, so this was something we talked about yesterday on the show too, which was like, look, if you're going to suspend him, at least say we're suspending him because he's Draymond Green, essentially. And that's what it is. Like, if that is part of what it is. And Stormy, honestly, it's, you know, it's something we've talked about. It's funny. I saw it on Twitter and I retweeted it. It was funny. It was a tweet from an NBA analyst. It was like, all right, Draymond's talking all this trash that Steph has to back up again. Like, that's like that's what this is. He puts his team, like, it might be great, I guess, if you're dealing with it. You've won multiple championships, but you're putting yourself in a position where your team's got to pick up some slack now because of the way that you've been acting. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, I don't subscribe to this theory, but you can go back to the one that they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you could very much make an argument because of Draymond Green's antics, they have one fewer championship because of it. And now here you are again in a series in which you are down, but it's also a winnable series against an opponent that you're relatively evenly matched with, that you could probably win this series. I mean, they could have won that game, and yet he goes down because of his because of what he pulled off, his transgression. And then down the stretch, what do the Kings do? They put the opposing big, Kevon Looney, into every pick and roll imaginable, and they go after him, and they end up winning the game with rim run after rim run. So, like, and now you've got to be able to deal with it without him. It's a really big loss for one game, because now you're talking about the potential of going down 3-0. And yes, you're a 5.5-point favorite. You're at home. You're down 2-0. So every trend and their mother is going to point to you here in this spot. but they're not the same defensive team without Draymond Green.
Yeah, and that was obviously noticeable the last handful of minutes in game two. And yeah, clearly he has a laundry list of prior offenses. He doesn't do himself any favors in moments like this. But I also feel like he already suffered the punishment, right? Like, your team lost. You put them in a bad position. You got ejected from the game. But now you're getting, like, double the punishment on top of it, which I just feel like sucks. And again, speaking of not doing himself any favors, egging on the crowd with those right. interactions, the commissioner in attendance, like those types of things aren't going to help your cause in any way either. Funny to me, though, that he did ask for an X-ray on his ankle because he was feeling soreness with Sabonis pulling
yes,
on it.
Yes, a classic like troll job by Draymond. And here's so some numbers really quick to back it up, too. And that's what I was writing down. So, so far in this postseason, small sample size, defensive rating of 129.4 without Draymond Green on the floor. In the regular season, a much larger sample size, Draymond Green off the floor, a negative 6 net rating, or they've been outscored by 6 points per 100 possessions, and a defensive rating of 120.1. So they need Draymond Green out there.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, Stormy, like the way that this series has gone, where you're talking about some of the worst moments for the Warriors defensively have been when there's bench lineups are in, when he's not out there. They don't have a lot of good on-ball defenders outside of Draymond Green. So they're going to be up against it. And I get the market has adjusted. We'll see if that's enough, but it's a really big blow for a team that's up against it with what they've been having to deal with.
Yeah, and a team that has struggled defensively all year long, and you need that piece. Yep. And I said it on the show yesterday, he's one of those players that just is never going to get the benefit of the doubt at this point, just like Ndamukong Suh's not going to get the benefit of the doubt in the NFL. There's just players like that, and he's one of them. We saw that line was as high as -8. It's down to -5.5 now with that news coming out. But how do you just kind of generally, maybe not just the Warriors series, but when a team is down and they're going back home on the bounce back or different situations like that, how do you equate the numbers with the trends and different things like that?
Well, I actually wanted to ask you, like, what do you think? Because my kind of debate is just, like, how do you want to handle these things? So what we're talking about here is, you know, a team going going back home down 2-0 in a series. Generally, it is a trend that bettors really like to use, especially betting them in the first half. And you can go back to, like, 2007, right? And it's a really strong number for those teams. But books have adjusted when you're talking about what you're laying in the first half with these teams or what you're having to bet with some of these teams in the first half. So, for example, right, so we have this adjustment. Golden State tomorrow is a 5.5-point favorite for the game. For the first half, Stormy, they are, we'll double-check this, 4-point favorites. Mm-hmm. So they're 5.5-point favorites for the game. They're 4-point favorites for the first half. That's not how that should work. But these numbers are so baked up. But at the same time, you know, these situations come through. You and I were talking about it right before the show, right? Yesterday, I came on with you guys. Was like, I'm not sure if you want to lay 6 with the Cavs when they were 4.5-point favorites the other day. But what happened? They came out, they won, they covered. So is, I guess the question just boils down to, how much is the situational spot worth in terms of the spread? And is it worth it to buy into that trend, even though it's baked into the number? Because at least yesterday, we had two examples of it, and both of those examples came home.
And I think, similar to just when we talk about trends in general, it's got to be a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. I'm not the type that's just going to go blindly bet anything, right? And so I think it just has to be situational. And when it comes to the Warriors, I completely understand why that number is going to be what it is, just because people look at the championship pedigree. They look at what they've been able to do at home in certain situations. Yep. So it makes sense from that perspective. That said, I won't be doing it, but I get why people would.
Well, and to the point too, so we just gave you the numbers for the first half, at least in terms of the spread. The last 32 examples of this trend, again, team going back home down 2-0 in the first half. That is generally like the trend that people will follow. It's 15-15-2. So you're down, and it's been baked into the number quite a bit already. Like our first year in existence, Stormy, I'm telling you, like that would hit at like a 64% clip. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't really adjusted for, but you started to see it really get adjusted for once, you know, conversations about sports betting became a little bit more mainstream, once these trends become a little bit more forthcoming when it comes to where they're at and in terms of their popularity. But I still kind of want to feel like I'd lean a little bit more in the direction of, you know, your numbers should be static, your rating should be static, you're not getting that much value. But sometimes situations do pan out and they work successfully. And at least, again, yesterday, there's only two examples of it, but both of them came home.
That is funny, though, JVT. We talk all the time about how awesome it is, how much more widespread and accepted sports betting is. But then things like that, they're like, well, they're more aware of stuff now because so many more people are betting it. We do have three games coming up in the NBA tonight. Some massive injuries also potentially affecting tonight's card. Let's start with the Lakers-Grizzly, Ja Morant game time decision. Soft tissue bruise on that re-injured third right hand is a shooting hand. Coach Taylor Jenkins saying Morant did some shooting and dribbling during practice yesterday, and his symptoms are slightly improving. But what's your thought process on whether or not he's out there?
I don't know. So, like, if you go by what they were talking about after immediately after the game, it was like fire and brimstone. It was like he was talking about, like, oh,
pain levels at 10. He sounded super dejected.
Right. What was his thing? Like, you know, the hits just keep on coming or something like that. Which, by the way, nobody made you flash.
He was asked about his mental health, right? And he's just like, oh, it's just another thing.
Nobody made you flash the gun in the club. Let's relax on that one. But I will say, like, look, it seems it's a contusion that we talked about, right? Soft tissue, whatever that means. I would think that with multiple days now to get ready, that he's probably going to play. What's going to be interesting here, Stormy, is if he does play. So let's go back to game one. The market closed late, Grizzlies minus 5. So are we going to get a full 6.5-point swing back to where the market was for game one? Or more than likely, the market's going to do some arbitrary knockoff of the point spread because John Morant's injured. I would assume they close as like 2-point favorites, somewhere in that range, maybe 2.5 if he ultimately plays. But it's, again, one of those questions like we're talking about, right? Which is the market just a few days ago thought the Grizzlies should be 5-point favorites at home. And now it's the same situation. The only difference is John Morant has a bruised hand, and we're going to talk about maybe shaving that about 2.5 points or so. It's really an interesting dynamic. So look, this is just like a regular season game. You just got to wait for information. You sit on Twitter, you wait to see whether or not he's going to play, and you act accordingly. If he's going to play, try to fire on +1.5 or a money line price on the Memphis Grizzlies. And if he's not going to play, you could try to get in on a cheap price on the Lakers, who might even close like closer to 3, which that's another story in and of itself. Is John Morant, just given all the injuries that the Grizzlies already are dealing with, worth a swing from -5 in game one all the way to, let's say, -2 for the Lakers on the road? It's a pretty big swing, right? Like, you know, like, it's
significant. Yeah.
It's a really big difference. And it goes back to what we're talking about here. Like, how do you weigh situations versus the actual numbers and what these guys are worth? Given the injuries to Memphis, I would say John Morant's probably worth a little bit more than usual. So you can kind of make sense of -1.5. But I feel like 1.5, the number we're at now, is a number that John Morant's not playing.
Yeah,
but the market will still react if he's officially ruled out. So,
and I particularly don't have a lot of faith in the Grizzlies. Just, I mean, if he's not himself, then that's going to be significant. Even if he does play, and you're already down, like you said, the injury, Steven Adams and Brandon Clark. When you see Giannis Antetokounmpo doubtful, what do you think?
So, Matt Meiselman, who we're actually going to have on the podcast tomorrow, he's an awesome numbers guy. He used to work for DraftKings, and he does a great job of tracking this. But he's been listed Giannis multiple times as doubtful in the regular season. And then all of a sudden upgraded to questionable and then probable, and then he ends up playing. He has a high rate of playing with a doubtful tag. We'll see if that's ultimately going to be the case. I kind of lean toward him being available.
Okay. We will come back to the NBA a little bit later on in the show, get kind of a full breakdown of all 3 of the games tonight, as well as updated series prices and if there are any good futures bets to get in on now. But for now, when we come back, talking a little NFL, we got some news and notes and draft updates for you.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Try your shot every Wednesday at BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a $25 home run prop wager on any game and you'll receive a $10 bonus bet. Simply log into your account and opt in, or download the app and sign up with BetMGM to swing for the fences on MLB Call Your Shot Wednesdays. Just one more reason why the King of Sportsbooks, the best place to bet on baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to please play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. JVT, how is your fantasy baseball going, by the way? Because you're all in on NBA playoffs.
Not great.
How are you handling things?
Not great. So it's like it's the rotisserie league and everything's pretty volatile at the end of the, or the beginning of the year. So, you know, like yesterday I did fine. I got 8 points, but I'm still in 9th. I'm kind of just like, you know, popcorn farting around at the bottom. But here's the thing. So it's a keeper league. So I drafted a bunch of young guys. So I'm hoping I'm going to get ready for the, you know, the next few years. But not great.
Forward
we can
thinking.
Break it down for the next. If you want to go through the I was going to say my team name, but I think it's kind of inappropriate. If you want to go over my team, we can totally do it.
I'm gonna pass for now, okay. But I really appreciate that you're just offering that up. Very kind of you. We are going to talk about my team, though, the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you want to talk? I streamed Mike Clevenger today, Tyjon Walker.
There you go. No, the San Francisco 49ers, though, we got some news from Ian Rappaport today that evidently the 49ers have been fielding calls for a trade for Trey Lance. Mm-hmm. Not that they're the ones picking up the phone and dialing, but they have answered when others have called. Rappaport says, while no trade is imminent, the 49ers would almost certainly want to make sure Brock Purdy's rehab continues to go as smoothly as it's been going. And the interest from other teams in Lance has been there. And yes, that makes total sense if you do believe that Brock Purdy has done enough and earned the job, but he's just not healthy enough to get there yet. You want to make sure that you have your guy who you did trade up to take the number 3 overall pick with just a couple years ago. Right now, in terms of the odds for who will take the first snap for the San Francisco 49ers this year on DraftKings, Trey Lance is a -105 favorite, Brock Purdy +140, and Sam Darnold +350, which that number is actually a lot shorter than what it was initially.
For Darnold,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're betting this, it's going to be Purdy or Darnold, right? I mean, so last report I read was that the hope was Purdy was going to be ready for mm-hmm. the start of the season, if that was going to be the case.
But I see why the odds are what they are, because, like, how likely, like, do you really believe that? I'm not sure that I'm sold.
I mean, I can only believe what the mainstream media tells me. So, yeah.
Oh, so you still have C.J. Stroud going number 1 overall in the draft, too?
You know who you're talking to on that one. I was very, no. No, you're right. So I guess, okay, so here's the thing. So then is the bet then Darnold? Is the market a shortened there? So if we think that Purdy's not ready, and if we also think that the 49ers can get assets for one Trey Lance, well, then that would lead you to starting the backup quarterback who theoretically could be Sam Darnold at the beginning of the year, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that's the way you go. Because, look, if you believe in Brock Purdy, which, I mean, just reading between the lines of all the reports, it sounds like they do, why wouldn't you try to get something out of Trey Lance and recoup some of the assets that you shipped off to go and get him?
Well, and so that's, I think the thing is, while obviously you have a ton of respect for Brock Purdy and what he was able to do the back half of last season, very impressive, gets you to an NFC championship before that injury takes place. But what is he going to be coming back from that injury, I think, is going to be a big piece of it. And that's an unknown. And you did invest so much in Trey Lance and you didn't get to see him play more than a couple games. Do you want to give him that opportunity to show what he could be when he's at full health? So yeah. I see both sides of it, but I very much so do feel that, like, let's say you're in training camp and all those quarterbacks are on the roster, there's even still an opportunity mm-hmm. for Sam Darnold to win the job early. Like, that's very possible in my brain.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. Or just get it because the guy in front of him is not ready.
With the injury concern, for sure.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the whole point is it comes down to one word that you said, which is unknown. Still don't know what Trey Lance is. A lot of people, it's funny because a lot of people have pointed to him as being like a failure, but you're talking about 38 total dropbacks last season and 86 the season before that. He's still widely unknown to what he could be. And to your overall point, the unknown is also, there's other sides of it, right? There's the high end and the low end. The high end of what Trey Lance could be in that offense would be pretty damn good. Yeah. And that could really maximize what you have as a team. So I think ultimately you're probably looking at it the right way. I'm really interested to see how they handle it, though, because it did seem that they had a lot of positive stuff about Purdy going forward. And the other part, too, is story, because we forget these sort of things. Was it right before week one where the video of him making it rain in the club, right Trey Lance, and he was having a little bit of a good time? There have been reports of, and I know, you know, you always want to take these with a grain of salt. There have been reports of him in terms of not work ethic, but just the way he's gotten along over there in the locker room, maybe not being the best. So who knows if there's actually something to that, and that pushes you in one direction or the other. But the potential of Lance is, I think, through the roof still.
Yeah, it's just wild to think that dating back to his last year of college at North Dakota State, he's played fewer games than Brock Purdy played this season since that year. So it's just, you know, we just haven't gotten the opportunity to see what he has. It's also 8 days away from the NFL draft. And while quarterbacks went 1-2-3 the year Lance was drafted, that is not the expectation this year. Although Bryce Young, just a massive favorite at this point to go number one overall, minus like 1,400, depending on where you're looking at this point.
Oh, yeah.
We saw the report that he's canceled his, remaining plate visits that he could go on. He did already see the Panthers and Texans as well as the Raiders, but he largely knows that he's going to go one or two at the very least, because the Texans do like him.
He's going one.
Yes, but I'm just devil's advocate here at the very least. But now everybody's kind of freaking out because Panthers general manager Scott Fritterer yesterday was doing his pre-draft press conference, like all of them have been doing, and said that he never informed Bryce Young that he was going to be the number one overall pick. So if you have any questions about that, you got to ask.
Right, it was one of his staff members that did.
Yeah, there you go. Smooth.
Right?
Smooth.
He said, I didn't. He didn't say we didn't. He said, I didn't, of course.
Meanwhile, he did also go in depth on like a very detailed response about what they would do with Bryce Young after the draft,
right,
should he be Carolina Panther, talking about the different nutritional things they can do to help educate him and bulk him up, and that he's going to grow like
naturally.
It's the
O.J. Simpson thing, right?
Yes.
It's right in the book. If I did it, this is how I would have done it. Like, yeah, it's the same thing here. They're taking him.
Yeah, right?
Yes. I don't think there's any question.
So now the big domino beyond that is what happens with the Houston Texans at number two. Do they go ahead and trade out of the pick? Do they take a quarterback? Do they not take a quarterback? Where's your head at right now?
And this is the fascinating part about like all the endless discourse we have about this leading up to it, right? Which is, you know, it's C.J. Stroud, it's C.J. Stroud, it's C.J. Stroud, number one. And then now all of a sudden, things become a lot clearer and you realize like, oh, CJ Stroud, who by many accounts did have some limitations. Does he have the highest floor of the quarterbacks now? Yes. But does he probably have the lowest ceiling of the quarterbacks? Probably. So is that worth a second or a second overall pick if you're the Houston Texans, when you could take a Will Anderson type, for example, or trade assets? One of the things that's been thrown out there, Stormy, is the Colts trading to Forrest Buckner and another pick to get up to two for the Colts to draft whoever they want, whether it be C.J. Stroud or Will Levis. But I think Levis would still be available for.
Yeah, it's
right?
Like, but why do you need to do that if your guy's ultimately going to be available?
So I think ultimately what it comes down to is I think Stroud, if you're looking at it, I think he's going beyond the second overall pick. I think if you're the Texans, why not take the best defensive player that you think is going to be there, which would be a Will Anderson type, and then go into this year with whatever you have at bat, and then dive back into the pool next year where there's a really, really deep class of quarterbacks yet again. I think that's a real possibility.
Will Anderson, the favorite there at plus 150. Tyree Wilson and Jalen Carter, both on that list as the top defensive players as well. But I did think it was interesting that even on the odds board here, Will Levis is the first quarterback that's listed as the shortest odds here. Stroud set to visit with the Falcons, I believe, today, who have the number 8 overall pick currently.
And here's the thing, too. If you're the Texans, you still have the 12th pick to work with.
Exactly. So if you do want a quarterback, you can play with some things down there as well.
So, like, you take Anderson number 2, and let's say that Stroud slips, or let's just say Will Levis slips, or Anthony Richardson, and you're sitting at 12, and you get to, like, I don't know, number 8, and the Atlanta's on the board. And they're like, well, we don't really want this, make this pick, or Chicago at number 9. It's an easy move up to go and get somebody, whether it be C.J. Stroud or Will Levis or anything like that. So I think that's why Will Anderson is rightfully favored at number 2.
I know Michael specifically hasn't been the biggest fan of Will Anderson because of the lack of productivity his final season. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I mean, obviously that year where people were talking about he should be a Heisman candidate here, his sophomore season was much more like a bigger significant role that he had. How do you evaluate Will?
I think that's right, like it didn't really come off the page as a guy who was, like you said, everybody was talking about as a Heisman contender potentially and not really having a lot of splash production. But I'm also not going to pretend to watch every single snap of Will Anderson. I would assume that a dynamic pass rusher like that does a lot more than just get sacks, right? It's getting pressures. It's also being, of course, a presence that attracts double teams or anything like that, so other people can get cleanup sacks. I think there's probably more to his production than just the actual numbers themselves, and he grades out pretty well as a pass rusher by the PFF standards. I think he'd be pretty valuable, and in that Texans defensive system too, could be a really, really big asset.
And D'Amico Ryans, we know, is a defensive guy, so would not be surprised if that's ultimately what they do with the selection. We'll have more draft talk a little bit later on in the show, especially with Jalen Carter speaking for the first time to media and talking about how he doesn't feel he's going to fall a lot in the draft. His over under set at 6.5, but we got NHL coming back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There is so much to bet on in the next 30 days, and for a limited time, we can help you out. Become a subscriber today. VSiN, just $9.99. That gets you insight into daily baseball best bets, NBA and NHL postseason, the Kentucky Derby, as well as the upcoming NFL draft, just a week and a day away. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests. You get tools like betting splits that let you see where the money and bets are moving for every game, as well as the top VSiN experts leaderboard. New to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Sign up now, just $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. And speaking of hockey playoffs, big night in the NHL last night. All four road dogs coming away with outright wins, and they made it look easy. One of those teams on the losing end, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Welcome in a guest who knows that story all too well, our guy Nick Alberga, host of the Leafs Morning Take on the Nation Network, co-host of the NHL's Fantasy on Ice podcast as well. What's going on, Nick? You feeling okay after last night?
Yeah, I just had to map through like a 30-minute therapy session on Leafs Morning Take. I could not believe it's just the first game, but here I am being the counselor on day one. I love it.
So 7-3, and it got out of hand early. What did you make of the Leafs' performance?
For one, from a betting point of view, I don't think you can overreact. I think a lot of people in this scenario, it's easy to overreact. You look at the body of work. They have won a playoff series in close to 20 years, and you think the sky is falling. Let's not forget and lose sight of the fact that game one last year, the Maple Leafs won 5-0. So I think on the surface, it stings. But what's different from a 7-3 loss to losing in triple OT? I just don't see the difference. And I don't think momentum carries from game to game. I actually still like the Leafs in the series.
Oh, okay, so that was going to be my next question, because we were talking about this when it came to like the NBA stuff, right? Which is sometimes the market will buy a little bit more into scenario situations, narrative, than it does with the actual on-court or on-ice products. You still think there's value in coming back here and back in Toronto to win this series against Boston?
Yeah, in fact, I think when you look at futures, it's almost smart to first take a peek and a look at what happens in the first couple of games before setting your price and your bet for the rest of the series. And I think if you're a believer in the Leafs like I am, or a lot of people out there still are, I think now is the time to pounce on this team down 1-0 in this series. I think if you're looking for value, this is the time, because as we know, a lot of people love to bet on the Leafs. So like the New York Yankees of baseball, the Los Angeles Lakers of the NBA, the Dallas Cowboys, the money comes in on them frequently. And I think from now, coming off a loss, now is the time, if you believe on the Leafs to win this series in game two, I think now is when you put your money down.
Yeah, Leafs plus 120 in the series, minus 145 favorite coming up in game two. And we don't know a lot of the health stuff with Tampa as well, which could play into the Leafs' hand for sure. The Golden Knights also got embarrassed by Winnipeg at home last night. That was brutal. They're a plus money price in their series moving forward with the Jets. Do you think now's a good time to bet in on them as well? Or what did you make of last night's action?
So it's all subjective, right, Stormy? And you're going to hate me for saying this, but wow. I was on Winnipeg to start the series. I just have no faith in the goaltending. Like, that Logan Thompson injury just hurts so much, right? I mean, to rely on Jonathan Quick, who's like 4,000 years old, like, he's not the same guy. And then you have Laurent Blaisois as your game one starter and nobody really talking about it. That was a problem from the beginning. And oh yeah, you're facing Connor Hellebuck, who year in and year out is a Vezina candidate. So I don't know if that's a good storm right now, pardon the pun, Stormy, for the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't like the value even at that money. Having said that, Bruce Cassidy's done a great job, so anything's possible. But I just think goaltending and defense are so pivotal this time of year, and I can't overlook the fact that Connor Hellebuck's in one crease, and the other way, it's either Laurent Blaisois or Jonathan Quick, unfortunately.
Would that be an angle to bet Winnipeg team totals over in this series going forward? Like, is it that bad?
Yeah, definitely. But I think what you'll see here from Bruce Cassidy, one of the better defensive-minded coaches, is try to find a way to limit the time and space. Like, we see it a lot in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's why you're already seeing some of these numbers at 5.5. Like, that's scary and that's crazy. And I'm sure we'll see some fives in the Carolina and the Islanders series. I think that's what Vegas is going to try to do. But I think Winnipeg, quite frankly, has been a sleeping giant in the second half of the season. Let's not lose sight of the fact that a lot of people had this team to do actually something substantial this year. Josh Morrissey's had a great year. Nikolaj Ehlers is still banged up, but like Blake Wheeler scores last night. Mark Scheifele's a great player. Pierre-Luc Dubois was a monster. Like, I know they're being looked at as the underdog in this series, but I'm telling people right now that this is not an underdog at all.
Yeah, it was just, it was really disappointing early. And honestly, the Golden Knights should have been down in the first period and lucky to get out of it where they were at that point in the game. The Kraken stunned the defending champion Avalanche. You can get the Avs now in the series price, minus 135 to come back. The Rangers also looked fantastic in a 5-1 win over the Devils. As for tonight, four more games coming up. Game two's on deck. We've got the Islanders plus 145 dog at the Carolina Hurricanes. Canes got it done in game one. Total 5.5. Juice pretty heavy to the under at minus 140. You, however, are looking at the first period, my friend.
I am. So in general, I think when you look at tonight's slate, as you referenced off the top to start this interview, six of the eight road teams have won through eight games here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think it's time for the home sides to take control. Having said that, when I look at this Islanders and the Canes series, I don't forecast a lot of goals. I had the under 1.5 price in game one, and I'm going to stick with that. Antti Raanta, I thought, was pretty solid in game one. It was a low-scoring game as prognosticated. And, of course, you have Ilya Sorokin, one of the best goaltenders on the planet. And you have an Islanders team who just can't score. I mean, it's been a story with this team for, like, 5 years now. So, yeah, I'll continue, like, every game in the series, I will look at the under 1.5 in period one.
On a game-to-game basis in some of these series, do you see an adjustment from a money line price, you know, from a team that lost to a team that won? You know, again, tying it back to when we were talking about the association, we had two instances yesterday in these postseason series where team lost game one, laying a certain number, 7.5, we'll say, for the Suns, then came back late 8.5 in game two. Do you see those adjustments in the money lines from game to game? And if you do, how do you handle them?
Yeah, I think the market has to equate for desperation, right? And the favorites and the underdogs. Like, for example, at that Edmonton game tonight, like, they're grossly overpriced, probably. I think you look at Los Angeles, you look at the body of work down 3-1 in game one, they storm back in that game. But I think it's the right price. I think Edmonton's going to win tonight. I think in order from a betting perspective to find that juice, I think you look at regulation, you look potentially at the puck line. I would look at some McDavid props as well, but I do think the market tries to equate and keep tabs on sort of the desperation level and like who is the better team through the 82 game slate. And again, we talked about overreacting. Now's not the time to overreact. I think now's the time to extract some juice and value in the prices. Cause you know, I'll speak for myself in a strategy in betting. I like to see, you know, how game one goes. And then I respond accordingly where I think teams are going to bounce back. And there's a couple, obviously, I'm looking at tonight.
Well, I know you like the Oilers and regulation, and that bet made me absolutely want to throw up the other night.
I saw that.
Dude, and I knew it was going to happen, right? Because that's just the way that things work sometimes, and you could feel the Kings just kind of storming back in that period. But 20 freaking seconds to go, and of course, the Kings score on the power play to force overtime, and then a bad beat for bettors as well. Anybody who had Oilers in the under was very, very frustrated. You mentioned looking at some McDavid props. I know with him, they're always going to be juiced a little bit. Do you have like specific limits to which you feel comfortable betting McDavid, or what are your angles here?
Yeah, I'll probably look at a goal like first and foremost. I know the prices are going to be juiced, but like the guy is just so incredible coming off a ridiculous season, and very seldom does Connor McDavid get 0 points in a hockey game. That happened in game one, which tells me he's probably going to erupt on home ice. So it's all about Drysdale, I felt, in game one, but tonight I'm looking at over 1.5. I think if you want to get crazy with it, maybe you look at over 2.5 points. The shot prop, like McDavid's the best player on the planet. It's not even close. I think he finds a way to get cooking tonight. He's going to win the Hart Trophy, he's going to win the Hart Trophy. Like, there's just so many reasons to bet on Conn McDavid and the Oilers to win game two tonight.
The Stars, another one of those teams that you're looking for in a bounce back coming off the double OT performance.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Like, I like Dallas. I'll say I put money on them. Having said that, I'm just so curious to see how they react to losing Joe Pavelski. Gets crunched by Matt Dumba in that game. And Philip Gustafson, everybody's looking for that goalie to really find their way in the Stanley Cup playoffs. If Philip Gustafson was one of the better goalies in the NHL period in the second half of the season. Of course, they got him last summer from the Ottawa Senators. He's really turning into a superstar. And that's why I think if you're looking for offense, that's probably not your series. I do forecast a bounce back for Dallas. I think they take care of business, but I wonder if it's closer than people think. Minnesota's in a groove. They're playing really, really well defensively. And again, they got that goaltender right now, too.
Last minute here, Nick. I know you don't have a bet in the Panthers-Bruins game, but Patrice Bergeron, of course, missed game one. A little flu bug going around the team. Have you heard anything about how they're holding up?
Yeah, it's very weird with Bergeron, because then I just read reports today that he's dealing with an injury. So, like, I half jokingly thought, well, is it load management for round two? I mean, you don't want to count your chickens before they hatch, but, like, they handily took care of Florida with some injuries in game one, and I'm back in the Bruins. They're just so much better. I know it's tough for President's Trophy winners to win the Stanley Cup, but this Boston team, in my opinion, is so much better than Florida. On top of that, Alex Lyon, you're not real. Cinderella and all that, and I wonder if it's Sergei Bobrovsky tonight.
It has been a good story, though, I will say that. Nick, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
No worries. Take care.
Nick Alberga, everybody, make sure you go check out Leafs Morning Take on the Nation Network, as well as the NHL's Fantasy on Ice podcast at The Golden Muzzy on Twitter. One of those just excellent Twitter handles, I must say. But yeah, hopefully the Bruins get it done. I actually have a Bruins-Celtics futures parlay.
Right.
Producer Steph and I
looking good.
Went in on that one together.